Someone is using a counter-jamming frequency projector. Find it and destroy it immediately!
Captain, do you suppose any of the guards know what a counter-jamming frequency projector looks like?
Destroy everything!
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Whovian Review. I'm Michael.
I'm Shelby.
I'm the decondensed Jeremy.
I'm, I guess, the recondensed Jeremy.
And howdy from Colin.
And tonight, we're going to be talking about The Pirate Planet, the second story in the Key to Time season.
And the first Douglas Adams story.
It is the first Douglas Adams story.
Ah, fun fact. What is it the third of?
Nothing.
Oh, darn it.
No.
Second or something? The second, Romana.
No, it's the first Romana.
Wait, but
no.
I thought Romana was the last one.
Yeah.
This is her second...
Well, it's her second story, but the first incarnation.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, man, it gets timey-wimey from here, doesn't it?
Yeah. All right, so there were a lot of great lines in this that actually made it a little difficult for us to find the opener, but I think we all laughed so hard at that one.
I think there was quick consensus.
I mean... Yeah. Going in, when you figure out who the head writer is, you know you're going to be in for a good time with this one.
Oh, man. And it was. It was a very fun thing, but the plot came together.
Mm-hmm.
And also the costumes and the set were pretty magnificent in
and
this.
And the twists. The twists were...
The twist was great, mm-hmm. and it made sense. It was surprising, and it really, you know... Brought up some cool
questions.
Yeah,
something was going on with that that woman in there. I could sense, like, there's some pull.
She was
that
the
he
only
has.
One that, like, he wouldn't kill immediately for, you know, bad-talking him.
Right, and she, like, would, you know, talk to him, you know.
Like he was beneath her.
Yeah.
It also, like, and this is a sign of Douglas Adams, like, he's a really good writer. He knows how to drop you the little hints and lures so that you are... the hooks right here. Like, you talk about the queen, and then you have this woman just suddenly start showing up, just talking down on him, and just, what was she, the therapist?
It seemed like the therapist.
The nurse.
The nurse, therapist.
Is what she called.
Doesn't matter. That is not bedside manner at all.
No.
Well, I guess, in a sense, if you have a nurse or if you have a therapist, then you're probably not going to try and kill her because she's the one trying to keep you sane.
Mm-hmm. Right, but if you're insane, then that is something you might do.
Exactly.
True. Although she must obviously have a handle on her patient.
Yeah, well, you know, and then that also quickly comes to light because the doctor even points out, like, he's just putting on an act. Mm-hmm. Like, he knows what he's doing. He is a smart guy. Be careful.
Mm-hmm. I think between Bruce Purchase, who plays the pirate captain, and Tom Baker, you've got a battle between the two egos in this particular story. And I will say that Bruce Purchase, who does this crazy, amazing, over-the-top performance, actually is more believable than most of the other over-the-top performances in Doctor Who's history.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I agree. No, you're right. It's just his consistency. Like, how he did it and how he had his lulls and ramps were just, like, where he would be, like, talking calm for a second, then he'd just ramp up angry.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you see that the character actually has, like, some credibility in
mm-hmm.
some different dimensions that we wouldn't have expected
mm-hmm.
Originally as well.
Which yeah.
I think really, you know, helps that out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and there's a twist that he's actually been doing all this to eventually get rid of the queen.
Because
mm-hmm. he knows what she's doing and is trying to go against her, but she's obviously rigged him to do her own bidding.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unfortunate
yeah,
for
him. Yeah, it's kind of like a Emperor Darth Vader type relationship.
Sort of, yeah. But it, in this case, Darth, it would be like as if Darth Vader really didn't have the control or the power at all. Because he doesn't, I mean, he seems to have the power, the captain, because of his booming voice and the fact that he kills everybody. But in essence, he's not the one responsible.
Well, I mean, he never seemed incompetent. He just seemed loud. And, I mean, occasionally...
Well, I mean, if you kill everyone who makes the slightest mistake, then you're not a very good leader.
Yeah, I mean, from any leadership perspective, you know, about, you know, any expertise that they'd put down there or written, like, this is a leadership strategy that works in very maybe specific situations. But, you know, for something that's going to last for... you know, many years with a crew and different strategies, like, this isn't going to hold up for him.
One of my favorite little details about his leadership style, like, we knew he liked second, like, his personal second, not the therapist, right? His second in command.
The scientist guy.
Fibula. He liked him, yeah. So, what I loved about it was, like, the first time Fibula was like, oh, you're going to kill me. He keeps killing other people around him. Never him. And then you realize at the end, no, like, Fibula is his favorite person. When Fibula dies, it's like, I'm so sorry. Like, that was actually kind of, for such a bombastic character, to have a moment of like, oh, he was your BFF.
Well, I feel like that kind of gives him kind of like a fan favorite character mm-hmm. here. You feel for him in the end, which is, I mean, obviously he's been killing everybody off and doing evil deeds, but I think in this case he's kind of forced into it.
Yeah,
and that's a sign of a great character, really, if you can feel for someone who has done all those monstrous things.
Exactly, and he does have that tender side, and actually cares about people and places and planets. He just knows that he can't care in lieu of what the Queen wants.
Okay, so here's a theory. Do you think he gave his minions those helmets so they couldn't see where they were shooting half the time? Because they
I mean, have you ever tried running down a rocky slope while shooting rebel scum? It's not as easy as it looks.
They are the stormtroopers of this story, yes.
I think of the entire Doctor Who universe. I've never seen anyone with that bad of aim.
I don't know. I think it happens. I feel like
occasionally the Daleks have that bad of aim.
Yeah.
I mean, they weren't even lasers. They were more like flashlights that it seemed.
Maybe that's the problem. They were just like flashing light in them.
Actually, we saw the original version. There is a special edition version where they actually have lasers and it makes it look so much better. But I just figured.
But I bet that doesn't improve their aim.
It does not. No. They still miss completely.
You know who had great aim in this? It was K-9.
And Ramona. Oh.
And Ramona,
oh,
yeah.
Ramona takes down a guard.
Yeah, but K-9 coming with that robot bird that you took down, like, aw.
I know. Although, before we go, aw, K-9 killing a robot bird.
Well, the bird was murdering everyone.
I know.
So.
But let's just also kind of talk about K-9's other vicious act of how long did you stun them for?
Indefinitely.
That was like, no.
Indefinitely.
Indefinitely, I was like, well, that's
dark.
Dark. I mean, it gives you, as you stated, some wiggle room.
Yeah, it's a little bit ambiguous. You could interpret that a different way.
You could, but you don't have to interpret it.
Yeah, I know. And then the doctor also follows it up with, like, oh, good.
One thing that I will mention is that we started this story off with the family, which included Prelix, the one that gets taken over by the Mentiads, and the girl that's his sister. And I feel like that storyline kind of was just kind of faded a little bit. It didn't really kind of have, and at least the last few episodes, didn't really have much.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think it was just a way to get you interested in the Mentiads before, you know, because it took so long to become relevant.
It would have been nice to have a little bit more family-oriented something.
I don't know.
The end there.
I mean, I actually kind of want to know if like, and I know Douglas Adams likes to do social commentary a lot, and I wonder if he was talking about how, oh, if police do it, we just don't bat an eye sort of scenario for back then, because that's what that read to me. But
this whole like planet read to me very Roman Empire. Mm-hmm. The art, the clothing, the attitude, the, you know, like all of it. They didn't just like the culture really seemed to like, you know, thrive in that, which is kind of an interesting thought, because they like the British Empire went around, you know, plundering the loot of the world. So in some ways we're kind of pirates, and I never really think about them that way, except for, you know, when they're framed like this. And we do see a lot of, you know, other pirate allusions, obviously the parrot, you've got the plank that he makes him walk. Yeah. The eye patch. Yeah. Like it's really great. But, and so like that makes it so the whole time you're watching it going, yeah, okay, the pirate planet, I get it. It's a planet full of pirates. And it's more than that. It's actually a planet that pirates other planets. And it's kind of brilliant because it has the mystery right there in the title, but you don't realize it till you've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like the fact that you make it sci-fi by making the eye patch more steampunk in terms of...
And the metallic claw.
His whole costume was so great.
It was actually the details were beautiful. Like the stitching that was across it with the what do you call those metal bump things when you put them on?
Studs.
Thing. Yeah, the studs all around him.
Oh yeah, it was great.
Yeah, and his hook, which was just a claw now.
So I have to wonder what their legal system is like, because as Romana just pulls out like a little periscope thing to look at a faraway object, like a guard comes up and is like, that's not allowed, and smacks it out of her face.
Yeah, so I think it's like any technology, so anything that's not on this list of allowed things is disallowed, and anyone who, you know, fails to enforce that gets killed.
And then, like, doctors aren't allowed?
She just assumed that.
Well, no, I'm pretty certain those things aren't allowed, because they don't want you to question, ask, or anything.
They don't want any education.
They don't want any education, and the special reason why you don't want a telescope, you learn later, well, if you have a telescope, you could look at the sun. If you could look at the stars and the alignment of things, you might start to realize that nothing's in the same alignment.
Well, I mean, they knew that the lights were changing. They just...
Yeah, but they didn't... They called them lights. They never...
Yeah, oh, that's true, yeah.
They didn't really grasp what they were.
One thing I have to point out real quick is that back in episode one, we have a great scene with Romana. She gets arrested, and she obviously has been taking after the doctor at this point, because she treats it as if she's being escorted as royalty, as opposed to being arrested. And she tells him, oh, I hope you know where we're going. And it's all very fourth doctorish kind of lines.
I don't know. That kind of just reminded me of Time Lord culture in general.
True. And Romana is that kind of way too. At least this particular version of Romana. She's got that pomposity that the doctor holds quite nicely. But I love that. I love that they kind of show that she is very Time Lord, and it keeps her more different from some of the previous companions, because most companions would be more hapless or helpless.
Speaking of different, there were a lot of really great different concepts in here, like having one of the segments of the Key to Time be an entire planet,
mm-hmm.
having, you know, a planet pirating other planets,
yeah.
having, you know, a bunch of planets compressed into a small room to, mm-hmm. you know, be able to form a black hole. There were just a lot, you know, and space pirates.
Mm-hmm.
And that led to one of the greatest speeches that Tom Baker had.
Oh, so
when,
emotional.
When he's with, yeah, very emotional with the pirate captain. And he's like, well, what's it all for? What are you trying to do here? There's no point and purpose. Well, he finds out what's really going on. But
it still wasn't a good justification.
No, terrible justification. One life isn't worth that.
So, well, but let's say if you don't stop her.
But, I mean, it seems like you could easily stop her by just, like, you know, knocking down those bars that were keeping her body suspended. And
I don't think it's that simple with how powerful she seems to already have been. Like, he even thought he came with a plan to get rid of her, and she immediately said, no, I'm turning you off. I'm pretty certain that she had safety mechanisms in him the entire
time. That's fair.
So he had to go with the long game.
Yeah.
Even though it was a terrible game, he had to do it in order to stop her in... Overall,
yeah. If you didn't, then the universe is just gone. It's just one planet after another being sucked into the and compressed and turned into just raw materials.
And of course, this means that it's all an act. Everything he did, what, like killing off all the people that are around him, all that's an act to try and throw her off.
It's an act, but he also did those things.
Yes.
Yes, he did do those things. And he tried to seem like he was enjoying it. But I wonder if he actually did. I wonder if he was tormented about
that's
it.
That's one of those things where I am actually, this is the one thing I have. There was no need to let him die. Like, you could have just had him weakened or thrown off and hadn't had a conversation with him later, maybe about him regretting himself, but instead killed him off, and so you don't know. And I respect it, but I'm bummed out at the same time. Like, there was an opportunity there to have more of a conversation with someone you thought was the villain and realizing he was just as much a victim as anyone else.
But and then at the end, his life was cut too short and it was tragic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably why they did that.
Yeah.
You feel for him, is weird.
You are left at the end with a, wow, I wish I knew this guy better. He really, you know, was different than I thought. And it's like, oh, well, he's dead. I mean, that does kind of have a powerful life-like
quality. You know what's really would be interesting? To see fan fiction. And just on the idea of what he was like before he
crash landed and needed those cybernetic things.
And the queen like took him over.
Yeah.
Like what kind of
I bet he was not a great guy beforehand, would be my guess.
You don't know that?
I bet he became a better person while trying to fight the queen.
Oh, okay.
That would be a nice character arc.
Yeah.
What's interesting is the sort of technology was they found a way to dematerialize using, you know, certain rare crystals, but we haven't really seen very many other species or entities who have used power or technology to the similar level of Time Lords. Often. It has happened, of course, in select cases, but, you know...
But these people had to, like, cannibalize whole planets to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, well... True.
They're not energy efficient, for sure.
But they did manage to sort of go around and collect a bunch of gems that way, and even disrupt, like, the spatial-time continuum. So the TARDIS probably has power greater than the entire ship, because, you know...
Oh, for
they're
sure.
Like,
yeah.
Figures of incalculable, immeasurable significance and stuff like that. But what's also interesting is, if they're teleporting to planets, don't they have to be incredibly selective about the size of the planet?
Yeah.
But it has to be smaller than their actual crust, yes.
And it has to have the minerals that they're interested in.
Mm.
Exactly. So I was wondering, there's not exactly a one-size-fits-all, so they have to have a decent level of control as to where they can teleport.
And presumably the planet they started with was like, large.
Oh, yeah,
the
construction of that, either maybe they haul it out a planet and then strap technology to that, or they just completely manufactured this gigantic shell.
The Dyson Sphere.
Or, yeah, maybe they organized the shell on the surface of a planet and then mined the planet itself.
Well, that's
the Dyson Sphere.
That's what I meant, is by hauling out a planet and strapping technology to it. But, but I was wondering if throughout that as well, not just the technology, there was something else. So like how the gravity sort of keeping the planets together, how the doctor sort of was like, oh, that's entirely genius. It's like almost praising it like to high heaven, like nothing else before. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this technology is like kind of a masterpiece over here.
Yeah, I like that. It gives a lot of gravitas, I think, to the situation.
And
that rarely happens, you know, from a doctor perspective.
And I'm going to say I like the use of, like, certain settings where, like, we're going to use, like, a factory-like place, which they did. And I think it was actually a set, so they flew it up at the end. But it really looked like a proper, like, factory setup. And then
the
actually using the mine was a good touch.
I don't think you could do that today.
Oh, no, because that was a mine shaft elevator they went in. And
yeah.
That was, because I'm not, that whole, when it slammed down with the guard door, like, oh, that's a real mine shaft.
Yeah.
And yeah, again, you couldn't do that right now. Nope. No one's going to let their prize actors go anywhere near that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's interesting is, like, the cave would probably have so much reverb, it would, you know, interfere with mics anyway. So it would probably be an...
Well, and they had the running across the inside of a cave.
Yep.
Yeah, with armed guards, so, like, a decent amount of people were in that cave system.
Yeah.
Oh, someone suddenly got hurt.
So I will say one negative aspect of this is some of the side characters, especially the father, Balaton... The acting for him was rather dismal. Mm-hmm. And some of the... I mean, obviously, you had the Mentiads who are just kind of walking around, and the one guy that gets shot just kind of falls down gently. And it's just some of the acting on the side.
If you're going to die, just take it easy, okay? You don't have to die hard.
Don't be try hard. Don't die hard.
I just wanted to point that out, that there is, I mean, it's not all rosy and all perfect. I think there could have been some improvements there, at least.
Though, I don't know, the old man sort of had a whimsical thing. Like, they were lined up, and it's like, so, you want to go with me? And they nodded yes, and no, absolutely not.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's part of the writing, though. I don't think that's part of the acting. At least from my perspective.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, speaking of writing, I liked the slang in this. I felt like a lot of good attention was, like, mm-hmm. he's, you know, like, just random, you know, other words and metaphors. And English has a lot of metaphors in it, naturally. Yeah. And really, like, paid attention to that and put in different words for it to make it sound more naturally alien.
By the moons of madness!
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many things that the captain said in this that were just like, holy moly. But it was kind of, it was creative. Definitely have to give it that.
And, you know, although the acting wasn't great, I will say that the father's, like, standpoint kind of made sense and was in good keeping with, like, characters in Doctor Who in general. You always got that older person to be like, no, the old ways are the best ways, don't rock the boat.
Yeah, true.
But also, you know, you kind of get where he's coming from, because it's like, clearly he's seen, you know, these are probably his grandkids, and he's seen, you know, his kids dying, you know, following this rebellious thing, and he's like, don't do that. Just keep your head down.
Right, yeah, he also had some...
Again, that's the older generation, which is just like, just say yes.
Grin and bear it.
Grin and bear it, and enjoy the fruits of this society, which are stolen goods,
like
some countries may have been doing at the time.
There's some sort of projection at the beginning, though, where he was just saying, oh yes, we're going to be in a new golden age. This age will be golden. There will be jars of gold everywhere. And it's like, okay. But, like, what is this message for exactly?
That message is simple. Well, for one, they expect everyone to be like, yay, excited.
It's so that everyone gives thanks to the captain for all the good things that happen.
Yeah, it's hero worship, and it's forced patriotic hero worship. That's what it's there for.
Those were the most pathetic yays, by the way.
Well, patriotic forced hero worship are the most pathetic yays you'll ever get.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, and they're like, that one guy in that crowd of random people that we suddenly have a camera on is not yaying. Let's go spy on him. Mm-hmm. Thought that was an interesting thing.
Yeah, like, how their camera angle didn't catch K-9 and probably wouldn't have caught, like, a particularly short person. Like, if Ramona 2 was walking there, they might not have noticed her walking to the planet.
There's that one scene where where the captain and Fibulee discover that K-9's being witnessed on their cameras, and that scene right there actually felt like they were looking at K-9 going in, like, slow motion, just kind of generally going wherever he was going. It felt very well directed, that one specific scene. I remember that.
Well, of course, they didn't have an actual thing there. It was probably just a green screen or something, so they did have to act it out. But I thought what would have been interesting is if, like, the cameras were zooming by, it would be one suddenly, like, the doctor would appear on one of the screens and they're like, wait a second, back it up. Like in Spaceballs, for instance.
That usually happens in other stories, but I mean, it wouldn't it be hilarious if just in any other show or movie you just see K-9 just kind of go by. Like, in the Star Wars universe, you have all these droids going by. Have a K-9 go by. Mm. That would be so cute.
Oh, yeah. Or, like, there's two times in Futurama where the Fourth Doctor shows up.
He just walks by. There's actually quite a few sequences in The Simpsons where he shows up, too. So, The Simpsons and Futurama creator is a Doctor Who fan.
Yes, clearly. Oh, yes.
Well, shall we rate this thing?
Oh, I'm ready to rate.
Go for it.
Okay, so let's start off with the one thing everyone's going to know. No Clara. Loses a point straight off there.
For God's
sake. Everyone already knew that.
I just want to make certain that everyone understands that this also leads to
Jeremy, she was there. Because everyone who was before that time...
We're not going to use that for every single one.
Just everyone that's before that episode.
So, all right, moving on.
So the point is, there were some things that, as we talked, were like, maybe, I would say maybe, like, concerns, like, sometimes, like, the father figure at the beginning, but I consider him a piece care actor. You can kind of get the idea that he's not really three-dimensional, but he fits the purpose, and you can get enough of a gist to try and build up what he's there for. Then the whole idea of Douglas Adams taking the idea of the pirate and saying, I'm going to just take this as is and transplant it into a space planet pirate base thing and just make it work. Where the Captain Hook has his crony, his second in command with the glasses.
A way more Long John Silver vibes.
Yeah, so yeah. Anyways, all these sort of elements, and I was just eating it up left and right. I enjoy it so much. And then I reminded myself that I have to give a +3 because Douglas Adams is amazing and anything he does is automatically great. So while I will detract 2 points for some issues that I think you can argue on plot hole or plot relevance or what was it well rounded enough. In the end, when you 1 point off, 3 points plus, and 2 points, you know, you get a 10 no matter what. From me.
Wow, you heard it there. That's big.
Well, I suppose for me, I particularly like the humor in this episode. It wasn't just humor. The whole time, there was some good story development consistently throughout. I'd say it dropped off a little bit. It waned ever so slightly in the middle, but maybe it was because I was super tired or something. But I almost fell asleep.
I did not.
And then it picked way back up for the very last episode and sort of continued its steam. If I had to say, as for... you know, my favorite character inclusion, the captain was absolutely rambunctious in this one and basically stole the show. I wouldn't rate it as highly, but I'd put this up there with, you know, the best writing in Doctor Who that I've seen so far. So I'd give it a good 9.6 out of 10.
I'm going to go next. As Jeremy the Elder mentioned, yeah, Douglas Adams, what a fantastic guy. Everything he does is just phenomenal. And just really, like, the writing was superb in this. I get that the family was a little bit sidelined, but they barely needed to be involved, and they barely were involved. So, I don't know, it kind of seemed to work. I think that, you know, as far as slow in the middle, like, compared to other classic Doctor Who stories, this one really kept moving and was intriguing, and there was a lot to find out, and you didn't feel like you got sidelined by, like blindsided by the ending, like, what? That came out of nowhere, but you also weren't seeing it coming, and it, you know, we had some good characters, some, you know, good sets and costumes, and again, excellent writing. I am also going to give this one a 10.
Oof. Well, well, well. What do I have to say about this episode?
Yeah, what do you have to say, Colin?
Captain, my captain.
Oh, God, I like this.
Captain, great character. Good stuff. Excellent, excellent pacing for a Doctor Who episode. And I think we have some good play with Romana and the Doctor. I think they're coming into their own right here. Some great canine action. Gotta love that. some good humorous moments, a twist, and some interesting things to churn on. And on paper, this seems like it would be a 10 out of 10, but I am not going to be able to justify that for myself.
Why?
Yeah.
Well, I think there can be a big subset of ratings, too, that have to do with your mindset at the time, maybe the setting, other things as well. So this might not be the be-all and end-all. You know, maybe on a bright, cheerful day, I may look at it differently. Maybe on repeat, I might really value this for what it is. However, it did not catch an interest level of a 10, and it didn't really suck me in at the beginning either. It took some time to churn and get my interest. I think giving this an 8.5 out of 10 is a very fair score.
Okay,
that's fair.
Well,
blow us away, Michael.
First of all, I have to point out that the one scene with the guards, when they get thrown against the wall because the doctor fiddles with the machinery, is probably one of the funniest, most laugh-out-loud moments in my Doctor Who history that I've ever had. Because when I was younger and watching this, that was the moment that got me. Although I will admit, even the whole just destroy everything quote that we started with at the beginning of this, I mean, come on, that was just like came out of nowhere. You're like, okay, that really, I don't know how that's going to work. But yeah, no, this had the right amount of humor. I think it had the right amount of plotting. I do think that there were some weak performances, as I had mentioned, but it doesn't really take too much away from this particular story. Douglas Adams is a fascinating writer and can really interweave the plot quite nicely. And the whole epic twist with the queen being the nurse kind of worked in this particular one. Yeah, you obviously know something's up with her, but you don't really know what's up with her because they hit it pretty well, I think. And I can't give this a perfect score, but I will give it a 9 out of 10, which is a little bit better than Rebo's Operation and definitely one of the higher scores that I think I've given recently.
Okay.
And there you have it. So tell us what you think. If you want to let us know, just don't hesitate to send us a message. We'll try and respond to it as soon as we can.
Bye, everyone.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
See ya.
Bye.
See ya.
Adios.
Sayonara.
Maybe one day.